This is our Happy House Hunters podcast today, and we also have a group for short-term rentals. And for those of you that follow me either on our podcast or on any of my social media, you know that we have a whole group called Lady Landlords of Ohio. So look that up on Facebook and join that if you're a lady landlord. It's a private group, and so we get down in the weeds over there if somebody has some real issues. We don't name names, but we get down into the weeds to deal with issues that are going on with tenants. And so it's just for lady landlords. So feel free to join that if you want. We also have a group, the ins and outs of opening an Airbnb, a guest house, bed and breakfast, anything short-term rental. And so we have an entire series of podcasts where we've interviewed folks that have those short-term rentals. And then on this podcast, we go through the six F's of real estate investing. It's how to find the real estate, how to fund it, then finally how to fix it. And then once you found it, you funded it, you fixed it, now are you going to flip it or are you going to fill it? And then finally, once you decide whether you're going to flip it and resell it or whether you're going to keep it as a buy and hold and fill it, then the next question, final question is how many of those do you have to do to not have a day job, to make that day job optional? And so one of the ways that you can make the finding and the funding, the fixing, the flipping, and especially the filling more passive is to have a property management company. So we are talking with Sean. And Sean, tell me how to pronounce your last name.
Lar, the H
Lar.
is.
I didn't know how it was pronounced. I didn't want to
No
mispronounce
problem.
that. So Sean Lar is with us today. And we're going to talk to him about what he does. And our big question of the day is when you're rehabbing those rentals, be either first right out of the chute, you just bought it, you're getting ready to buy and hold it, you're going to rent it. First of all, at what level do you rehab that? And secondly, the question there is then how are you going to manage that? And so Sean is a property manager and realtor. He works for Focus Realty. We were just talking about his location. He's in downtown Lancaster in a wonderful location, actually. He's right in the heart of everything there. He is a realtor and property manager with Focus Realty and Management. He is a real estate, it's a real estate brokerage in Lancaster, Ohio. He's a residential buyer seller agent. He's a residential landlord agent. He's a commercial tenant landlord agent and a commercial buyer seller agent. So that's a mouthful, Sean.
Where did I put all that at?
See, I did my research.
Oh,
Yeah.
Google.
Yeah, I've got a whole little thing about you here. Yeah. So, tell me about your journey into property management. What sparked your interest in this field to begin with? How did it all begin for you? What's your history?
When I got out of high school, I didn't really know what I wanted to do, so I joined the National Guard and all of that, and got back from all my schools and everything for that. And CJ had started invest CJ, my stepfather at the time, or at the time, started investing in real estate. And he was like, "Hey, you should get into this. This is kind of interesting." And he had a deal that he was going to pass on that he introduced me to the seller. And we were able to work out terms to purchase my first property, which was a triplex. It's actually here in Lancaster, and I acquired that deal. It almost fell through because I was going to buy it as an owner occupied on an FHA loan, and last minute some things came up and the lender had made an error and fell through, and I had to find private money real quick between CJ and a couple of people I knew, closed it, and then refinanced it like 2 3 days later under a different bank.
Wow. So you kind of got thrown into the fire when to get started. Yeah.
Yeah, that was kind of my starting investment in real estate. And then after that, I went on my deployment, came back, and CJ had been continuing with the real estate stuff. I was talking to him. I did some things under his office, under his company, You Pick to Rent, for a while, just doing some accounts payable stuff. And I decided I wanted to kind of further my career. So I moved over to the Focus end when that was just starting up between CJ and Brian. And then I worked to get my real estate license. From there, I was pretty much in the weeds as a property manager. Got to a point where I was managing, directly overseeing about 350 units.
Wow. And I think
And
I have my hands full with just 28. I've got 28 doors And I have one tenant that is a little shaky financially that I keep, you know, kind of trying to help along. We've got one that's moving out. So I only have two that I'm having to work with. And it seems to take a certain amount of my time, you know, back and forth. And, you know, did you get the rent paid and blah, blah, blah. How do you handle 300 that you're overseeing? I mean, did you have to quickly come up to speed with some sort of a staff or a team?
So kind of how it started, we were originally doing like with property management, since we're working on a larger scale, there's a few different mindsets of ways that you can structure a property management company. Over time, we've kind of switched that to a department style of management with the company. That's what we're currently in the process of now and what we're doing now. Back then, it was based off a book of business. So I was responsible for a book of business. And then other property managers responsible for other parts of the books of business. And we had a finance person that was handling all the financial aspects. So anything in-depth, reconciliation, all of that. And at that point, we around that 300 units point, we got a customer service person that was handling inbound phone calls. But I was still the primary point of contact for those. It was a lot of juggling. A lot of unit turns were going on in those in that portfolio. And we did a lot of reposition properties where owner buys the property, wants to remodel the whole thing, and handling all of the eviction process and things on delinquent tenants, tenants that are not leaving during turnover, all that kind of stuff. That kind of, it was exceeding my capacity at points. And then as we restructured over time, switching to that departmental style, helped take certain tasks that don't require a licensee, like inbound questions of what's my rental balance? Oh, I have a maintenance request I want to put in. That kind of stuff can be handled by a customer service person, separating out leasing so that I don't have to handle all the leasing showings, all that kind of stuff. Slowly just taking those smaller tasks off your plate over time help you handle a larger scale of properties.
Well, that certainly makes sense. And again, I now have a maintenance team, you know, I've got my roof guys and I've got my plumbers and I've got my handymen, but I do have one guy that's kind of my maintenance supervisor. And so he's my eyes and ears because, again, with 28 doors, I can't always get out to physically look at something. And you know, as well as I do, and for those of you that are on the call that are new landlords, you'll get this. A lot of times your tenant doesn't even know how to describe to you exactly what's wrong. And, yeah. And so you just have to sometimes just go take a look yourself, and that's not always possible. So I now have, you know, my guy that I can just call him up and say, hey, go see what's really going on over there and see what the fix is and come back and tell me what I need to do. And so do you have folks like that, or do you try to go out and take a look at some of those issues?
So unless it's like, so as far as my role in the company now, I won't directly go out to a property to observe an issue unless it's something where we've had something very significant occur that is potential for a tenant to have to move due to like complete unlivable, like it's going to be a large thing to repair to the point where we can't retain tenancy, or something that may involve legal or government agencies, that kind of stuff, code enforcement, those kinds of things that get to be very in-depth or very like high level. That's when I'm kind of involved at the property for one of those items. A lot of times if we utilize a system that helps systematize property maintenance. So if tenant puts in, I have no power in my bedroom, it takes keywords inside that maintenance request. It takes what category they selected, and it tries to help triage some of those issues. Have you tried, or it sends like a list of questions. Have you tried checking your breaker panel? Here's a YouTube video on how to do this. Have you tried checking, like if it's heat, have you tried checking your breaker, make sure power's on? Have you checked that you've changed your furnace filter and that it's not clogged? Have you checked the batteries on your thermostat? Those kinds of things. It helps to try to mitigate as much as we can for some of those very simple requests, because you understand the frustrations. Mm-hmm. You send somebody out for a trip, a breaker, and you're like, whoa.
I know.
The time on that and trying to mitigate that as best you can via giving them instructions, giving them a YouTube video, that kind of stuff has helped cut down on our maintenance requests, because I'd say 3 out of 5 times when one of those requests like that come in and it sends that stuff, oh, hey, I checked my breaker, it's all good to go.
Yeah, I get it. I get it.
We
I
request
had
pictures as well.
now, okay, so guys and gals, don't laugh at me. I had a salon. I was crazy busy. I had 5 salons. I was crazy busy. I had an appointment every hour on the hour. I'm working 12-hour days. I'm working 6 days a week. I'm exhausted. I'm working, working, working. And I finally had a day off, and the girls called me and said, the microwave's not working. Well, now it's not essential to have a microwave in a salon, but the girls couldn't get away for lunch. And oftentimes that was the only way that they could have their lunch there is to have a microwave. And so I was like, oh, my day off. And now I got to go take care of a microwave. And so my daughter had one, and she goes, Mom, I have an extra one. Don't go buy one. I'll just bring it over. So we did. We took the old microwave out, put the new microwave in, and it still didn't work. And then we realized that the little switch in the kitchen
The GFCI.
needed to be reset. And so Mark teases me to this day. He says, you threw away a perfectly good microwave when all you had to do was push a button. I'm like, oh, shut up.
Yeah, I've had some experiences similar to that before with certain items. I'm drawing a blank as to what it was, but I had something like that.
Yeah, so now every time a request comes in, we're the same way. We're like, okay, have you checked the power source first before you throw away the microwave? Make sure the power is getting to it. Anyway, this is a great conversation because any of us that are on this call that are landlords, you get it. You know what we're talking about. I want to talk about, Sean, when you're preparing a unit for a new tenant. How do you decide what level of rehab or refurbishment is necessary? And what is your general approach to those projects? Are you still hands-on when it comes to what level that you're rehabbing those between tenants?
Yeah, so where it kind of differs from us a little bit, for my own personal properties, it's whatever my intent is. Normally, if I'm purchasing a pro or normally if I purchase a property with the intent to turn it over, I've got on, like, let's say a hard money loan where I've got all the construction budget already in there and everything. That is going to be a full turn where I'm getting it completely up to pace for trying to make it appraise well. And then I'm drawing a blank here. We'll turn that over. I'll do flooring. I like to stick with stuff like LVP. I'm trying to mitigate how much carpet I'm using now,
Right.
because carpet just doesn't last. You can get it cheap, you can get it installed cheap. It's not going to last like LVP does. So we're doing that. We'll determine off of cabinets if they can be painted, do they need to replace, that kind of stuff. If you're not replacing cabinets, I still recommend doing a countertop. Because a countertop gives a really good image to it, even if the cabinets aren't new. And at least painting those or doing something with them to make them look nice, depending on age. If they're not recoverable, then it's going to be cheaper to replace. Going as cost effective as possible in the turn to maximize what you could, like, to maximize the what you can do with it, like as far as rent rate. I don't know what else to say with that, but when you're doing it on the property management side, a huge part of that is going to be owner intent. So, like, we have all kinds of different property owners. We have single family homeowners that they own one rental and they're maybe eventually planning on moving back into that, or they bought it as an investment, or they're not really trying to do much with it. Or you have the very aggressive owners that are trying to remodel, 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 refinance out, do a lot of those kinds of things. So it's a huge part of it on the property management side is just going to be what owner intent is. What do they want to do with the
Okay.
property and their goals over time? We're there to help facilitate that. We provide recommendations based off of, like, industry average. So we're looking at what other owners are doing, what other people in the market are doing. Is the trend now LVP flooring? Is it this? Is it that? Gray paint makes a good difference. It makes it seem a lot newer, or it makes it seem a lot newer in a tenant's eyes. If it's got gray paint, it's a remodeled apartment to them. So that's kind of some of the things that we're looking at. Just determining determining what things you can also do as far as preventative maintenance. Like in my property, if I'm leasing out a unit and it's got an older furnace, I'm going to start to look at, does it make sense to replace this furnace? What's its expected life left? Am I going to have this replaced in the middle of the winter time, or can I do it now? Just kind of planning a little bit based off of what you know is going to break. We like to take out things like garbage disposals. Tenants love to bring garbage disposals. Oh, I put a full bowl of noodles down the drain and now it's not working. Well, that's not how you use a garbage disposal. And you can completely just avoid those ticket or those tickets from coming in by getting rid of that garbage disposal. Can't really trust them with a garbage disposal or sometimes even a dishwasher. If it's easy to remove a dishwasher, I recommend taking those out because those have a shorter expected life than like a fridge or a stove, those kinds of things. And tenants also don't know how to use those and they tend to break them.
See, I wouldn't have thought that, but last year I probably had to replace three dishwashers over the course of a year with just 28 doors because I agree with you, folks. They really aren't using some of those appliances correctly. And I do agree with you on the garbage disposals. We try to remove those. If a property comes with one, we get rid of that. But then some of our tenants are like, can we add a garbage disposal? And we're like, well, if you add it, then it's yours and you repair it. Don't call us when it doesn't work. However, that still causes some issues. Because if it leaks under the cupboard, then next thing you know, you've got to replace your cabinet, your lower sink cabinet, or at least rebuild the floor, the decking in it, if it ruins it. So I get it. I get it. It's always that happy medium, trying to appeal to the tenant, but yet not to over rehab a property, because at the end of the day, and I'm not trying to say this to be sound mean in any way, but at the end of the day, that's why most of you on this call are property owners, and that's why your tenants are tenants, because they really don't have the same mindset as you have as a property owner. And that comes to play out when you're trying to maintain these units. How do you end up weighing, let's say an owner comes to you, Sean, and you're trying to weigh out the pros and cons of doing some simple updates versus a more extensive refurbishing? How do you approach the owners on what you're recommending?
So typically providing a difference in like rent is a big factor for rental owners. And looking at like, hey, we can remodel this, we can do a full remodel in this apartment. It's going to range roughly around this price. We can do a little bit of minor things. Here's what we're looking at on cost, and here's what the rent rates are going to be. Being able to provide tangible numbers to them on like, here's how much it's going to cost and here's how much rent you're going to get for it. What needs to be done to be able to make this lease. Like for example, I don't like putting it that way, but kind of just determining we could do a full turn here. We recommend doing this because of these different items that should be addressed. Or kind of like, hey, here's what we can do that gets everything good to go. I'm not really phrasing that all that well, but it's just kind of being able to present the options and what rent rates are going to be. There's a certain level of standard that we want to maintain as a property management company because we're working with a reputation as well. We want to lease housing that we would be comfortable living in as well. And so if it's very dated and it's not in good condition to lease, I'm going to recommend that we do at least what we need to do to make it meet our standard of kind of where we would be comfortable living in it as well. So I'm sorry if I did I dodge the question there or did I answer that?
No. That's perfect. That's perfect. You started by being a property management company, of course. And of course, when it comes to property management, oftentimes we're talking collecting the rent, doing the evictions, getting the units filled, that sort of thing. What led you to start actually doing the rehabbing and refurbishing in between? Was that something that was always a part of the property management in your mind, or is that something you added?
Yes and no. We kind of started out, we had clients that were GCing their own projects, and we had clients that are out of state that they can't GC their own projects, they can't do their own projects. We worked with third party GCing for a while and eventually kind of slowly kind of brought that in-house to where we're doing the majority of the oversight in the turns and presenting all the costs, sourcing the contractors. A lot of the people that, or a lot of the types of contractors that we're looking for is we want them to be able to handle the majority of the project because going around sourcing six different contractors and maintaining all of those different contractors is not really feasible for our scale. We have expectations for contractors to meet that, hey, we need you to be able to do this, this, and that, like this, and this in the turn. Because it's not worth having one guy do the paint and he's behind now the flooring company. We're getting, or with our pricing, we haven't found much of a difference in using all of those different little contractors versus using one that's overseeing contractors and taking a little bit of a cut on the top. It's still coming out about the same price.
Which
And
is much easier for you.
yes, and it lowers the amount of work on our end as well. But we're still getting competitive pricing because we're working with these contractors on a large scale. But meeting timelines is very important with contractors. Also, when you're fielding contractors, it's very important to see how they handle a situation where they were in the wrong. If they handle that situation like, yeah, we were wrong, we're going to make it right, here's what we're doing, that's a good contractor to keep around. If it's a contractor that's like, oh, well, the manufacturer messed it up and blah, 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 and tries to shift blame or doesn't take responsibility for their actions, that's not a contractor you want to keep around because they're probably keeping other stuff from you on other projects. So,
That's a good point.
but yeah, I mean, as far as like it kind of was not part of the property management start out with, but coordinating maintenance, coordinating turns is just something like it's became a general, expectation of a property management company, and that's why we aim to meet that. And just talking to other property management industry professionals, they also handle their unit turns and stuff. Some clients prefer to handle their unit turns, and if they want to do that, that's fine. We just notate it on our end in our processes, and they let us know when it's done. But then
Ah,
it
well,
still
that's
has to meet our expect. It still needs to meet expectations though, and be leasable. And we try to explain like, hey, with this and this and this, you're looking at like 60 days on market instead of 30, or giving tangible numbers to them helps bring a good example as far as what needs to be done and what how it's going to affect them.
well, I guess that leads me into my next question is how has working as a landlord agent, being in as a real estate agent for the landlord, how has that shaped the way you approach managing these properties? Because again, a lot of times when you're thinking about being a real estate agent, you're thinking that, the end buyer client is your customer, but in this case, the landlord is your customer. So how being an agent for the landlord, how has that shaped how you deal with them in property management?
You still have the same like duties and obligations you would as an agent. You have to act in your client's best interest. A lot of things that property managers in the industry sometimes struggle with is you're there to serve at the at your client, which is the landlord. It's not the tenant. And if the owner's wanting, or if the owner's like, hey, we don't want to renew this tenant, et cetera, you don't really have as much room to work. You don't really, you can't, and if you're sympathetic to the tenant and stuff, you do still have to follow your client's intent. That's something that I've noticed, like going through doing repositions where we're not renewing tenancies. We're there to do our job for the landlord, or and you may not be happy with like, oh, we got to get rid of, we got to get this tenant out, but you're there for them and they're the ones paying you, it's not the tenant.
Okay.
That's something that we found is a lot of people struggle with that. And it's kind of like a necessary thing in our industry because you're there to serve at the landlord and the tenant. Sometimes, I mean, we work with tenants. If we have one like, hey, they're selling the property, we're not going to be renewing your lease, we try to get them to apply for one of the other rentals so we retain them, but we try to make it as smooth
Right.
as we can, but sometimes there's conflicting things with that because tenant doesn't like that the owner doesn't want to renew them, or you know what I mean? Sorry
Oh,
if
I
I
get
blurred
it.
that one out a little bit too much.
No, I get it totally. And again, we're talking to a lot of newbies on this call that are just now getting into buying and holding and becoming landlords. And so there is always that conflict when you're trying to work with a tenant on again, I say this all the time to my students. I say to you cannot violate your own lease agreement. And so many landlords, and it's because we're nice people. I know. I see all of you on the call today. I know all of you personally, and you're very nice people. And so you have a tendency to let your tenant get away with more than really, and then you're frustrated, and then you start to resent, and then that's where you hear all the horror stories from Uncle Teddy, where he says, "I'm never gonna be a landlord." because of what my uncle went through, you know. And so you hear those horror stories, and it's because we're nice people. So I always say, do not be the one to violate your own lease agreement. And by having a management company like Sean's, your job is to just fulfill the lease. And you're not emotionally connected to these people or to these properties, maybe like the owner might be. Am I right, Sean? Does that register at all?
Can you rephrase? I'm sorry.
No, it's just, I think we get too emotionally connected and we feel bad for little Cindy, because, you know, she can't pay her rent. So we let her slide. And the next thing you know, we're frustrated because now she hasn't paid for 3 months. I can't believe when I get on some of our Facebook groups and they go, my tenant hasn't paid for 3 months. I'm like, oh my gosh, what are you doing? How are they there for 3 months?
And that's where we've had kind of like a shifting point, because before how it used to be would be like, hey, your tenant's delinquent, what do you want to do? Now it's kind of, we've shifted the way that we're structured to where, hey, this tenant's delinquent, they're behind. We are going to be proceeding with eviction, telling the owner it's happening because it needs to happen, because right. Then they get, oh, let's give them a little bit more time. And then I have a tenant that's on my books that is potentially multiple months behind. They're not catching up. If your property manager is recommending, we got to get this person out, if they're giving you that option, it's best to follow the property manager's advice on that, because we work with the tenants on a lot larger scale. And I've seen every story in the book. If we have somebody who has solid an assistance plan or something, like they're get or like so-and-so agency over here is going to pay up all of their stuff. Perfect. It's as long as you have the paperwork from them stating that's happening, we'll work with that. But if you give a tenant an inch on rent, like paying or like rent due dates, then it's going to become a recurring issue.
Well, and at the end of the day, and I'm a firm believer in this, you're not doing the tenant any favors and you're not doing yourself any favors, because number one, you don't want to spend your days chasing this tenant, and mm-hmm. the tenant doesn't want to spend their days hiding from you. So you know, it's better to end that relationship and let them find a place that they can afford, so that you can find a tenant that can afford your place. And yeah. then it's a win-win all the way around. So it never is doing the tenant any favors. Although as a landlord, you think you're doing the tenant a favor by letting them slide on their rent, but you're really not doing them any favors.
Yeah. So we've got, like, for example, like one at this very moment where, like, this is a really good example of this. The tenant or the owner elected that they did not want to renew the tenancy because they bought the property and they're remodeling it. We were in that window where, you know, it's like the non-renewals are based off of the periodic rental date, which is the first of the month typically. So the soonest we could give them the notice was like for like about 50 days out. So we gave them a non-renewal, and they've had pretty much 50 days to find a place. It's like, they're getting close to the end of their time frame here. They're like, hey, can we have more time, et cetera, et cetera. It's like, you've had like 50 days. Like we are not going past that. If you go past that, it's like you've had 60 days to find a place. You've had well more time than a lot of people have to find a place, because the minimum we have to give is 30. And so if we were to give that tenant or give them like another month per se, then we're going to get to December and they're not going to be out. And we have to be strict with that time frame, because when we start getting into the December time range, evictions start to get drug out. We're going to get longer on our time frame, and suddenly within the blink of an eye, it's going to be February and this tenant's still here and you're still trying to get this unit turned.
No, I get it. I get it. And again, you cannot scale. And mm-hmm. here's the lesson for all of you that are listening today. You cannot scale your buy and hold business until you start fulfilling your end of the lease, which means 3-day notices go on the door when you say they're going to go on the door, late fees apply when you say late fees are going to apply. And when they've fulfilled all of that and they're still not paying and they're still there, you have to give notice and get them evicted. And again, you're not doing them any favors by stringing them along or letting them string you along. So just know that. That's just a little side note. So Sean, give us a horror story. No names, but what's a big one that made you go, oh my goodness, I can't believe we managed to get through that one?
And specifically to a turn or a maintenance issue or
Whatever, what something, because again, I've got all newbies on the call, so what's one that you didn't think you were going to get through, but you did?
we had a house that back in time somebody along the line over the years had there was a layer of plaster on the ceiling, and then a layer of drywall was added, and then another layer of plaster was added, and the ceiling was over like almost 2 inches thick, and it was nailed, it wasn't screwed, and eventually that ceiling fell. And thankfully, the tenant was not in the room. His dog wasn't in the room when the ceiling collapsed in the living room. That was a huge old issue. And then the tenant waited to report it to us for like 4 days. And then Metro inspected the apartment and was like, "Hey, this guy's got like a ceiling on the floor. Like the whole place is like, what's going on here?" And we were like, "What's going? What do you mean?"
Oh, so he never even told you for 4 days, and he was on a voucher.
Correct.
So he had to have an inspection every so often,
Oh, you cut out there.
and the inspection happened, right?
Oh yeah, they were there for their his annual inspection and everything, and we were completely blindsided by the situation and got a 24-hour fail because if you have something that's like high urgency like that with so Metro lumps things into different categories, 30-day or 24-hour, something like that would be considered a life or like a safety to thing, so it's like a 24-hour. So we were able to get a contractor over there and get the place cleaned up and everything. And then we had to get quoting and we found other things in the ceiling from that that were wrong, that were just not even part of that situation that held it up a little bit because we had to have some further evaluation of the roof trusses and stuff. But we ended up getting through that one and getting it done. It took a little bit of time just because there was so many other things outside of the ceiling itself that became discovered from the ceiling being down that you wouldn't have
Because
otherwise
to look
known.
at that, you couldn't have, just to look at the ceiling, you wouldn't have even known that that was like that until it fell.
Oh yeah, you wouldn't have even known that the ceiling was like that because you can't tell what a fully finished ceiling that it has three layers of ceiling and it was only nailed. But yeah, we found like a there was a joy or there was a floor or like a roof joist or not a roof joist, a ceiling joist that was they took an old piece of like barn wood and put it over top of the joist that was cut in half and nailed it with it on top. And we discovered that kind of stuff. We discovered all kinds of crazy things with that one. But yeah, we got through that one. It took some time finding all that other stuff and getting that taken care of, getting the quotes, getting owner approval and getting it taken care of. Some
And
other
I my guess is that the owner didn't know it either.
Oh yeah, they had no idea as well.
Yeah.
They were like with the pricing and everything, it was a huge thing that they were like, "Oh wow, we didn't even know this was here." Like, yeah, we got to get this taken care of and we got it done. But that was like a really interesting one because if like what would have happened if the ceiling did fall on the tenant or fell on the dog or
Oh yeah.
like so that was like a pretty urgent one. I'm trying to think of what else like
Well,
story.
and while you're thinking, I want to say again to all of our listeners, if you're getting into the buy and hold real estate business and you're going to have these rentals, you're going to have to make sure that you run it like a business, which means make sure that you have files on all of your properties and all of your tenants. Make sure that you have your insurance paid up in case something like this should happen. If you have LLCs, make sure that you're getting them renewed. Because if you have a property that's titled into an LLC and then you let your LLC lapse, guess what? You're ending up giving yourself a lot more headaches down the road. So you're going to have to run it like a business. You're going to have to get some systems in place. And so I want to ask Sean, what is the best suggestion if again, the perfect one is to use a property management company because you're putting your systems in place. But if we have some listeners that they're like, I'm not, I only have a couple. I want to manage them myself. What do you recommend, is a must-have in their systems?
I'd say a must-have is having stuff systematized as far as how tenants place requests. So, having a separate phone number don't give them your, or don't use like a Google Voice or use like a voice over IP system. I've got a really good recommendation for one that completely separates out. So that if you ever do like switch to a property management company and you want to make sure that you're kind of keeping track of who's calling in what ways, if you eventually decide you want to expand and you hire staff in place, you want to be able to have a good transition point where it's smooth and you're not like changing phone numbers, changing contact info, that kind of stuff. I'd say it's good to do that. Even if it starts out as like a Google Voice that you port over into a system, or you start out with a system like what we're using for our phone system where we've got a phone tree and everything. I would say having a good set of like, every time you have an issue come up, write a policy about it. So tenant locks themselves out, make a policy on that of how you handle those situations. For lockouts, so like, for example, when we started having lockouts, we try to mitigate that the best we can by utilizing a deadbolt and a pass-through handle and not putting a bottom locking knob on apartments, because then they have to use their keys to lock the apartment when they leave. They can't lock their keys inside the apartment. Doing that kind of stuff to help mitigate that up front, but then writing a policy on it. How do you handle a lockout situation? Then you can just reference back to that next time you have that situation come up, and then you're doing everything the same way every time.
That's a great point. One of the things that I do, again, having 28 doors, I've put some systems in place over the years. And one of the things that I like to do is I like to put a keyless, at least one keyless entryway onto every rental. And it's just a push button, you know, locking system. I buy it at Lowe's or Home Depot for $100 or $130. And I have an owner's code programmed in there, which is the same for all 28 doors. It's my code. Then I have a maintenance code that's programmed in there, and it's the same on all 28 doors. So my head maintenance guy, if there's an emergency, he doesn't have to try to find a key to get in there. And then I have the tenant code that can be changed each time we get a new tenant. And that way, and then when we do our twice a year or and we're thinking about even going more, but right now we're doing twice a year inspections where we check furnace filters and batteries and all that. We change the batteries in that when we're changing the batteries in the smoke detector. So that way it gives us a way to access the unit. And then it's in the lease that they cannot change that particular lock. So even if another lock fails and we have keys that don't all match, it doesn't really matter because we have that one door on every unit that we can get in and our maintenance person can get in. So that's kind of our quick fix. I don't know how you feel about that, Sean, but that's one of the things that we've systematized.
Yeah, we do have some keyless entry systems where they use a code on certain things like common areas, like laundry and stuff. Mm-hmm. I really prefer we use a lock system where you can get a lock for like, we use master keyed systems where, you can get a lock that any of the tenant keys will work on that specific lock. And we use those for laundry rooms with an auto, like a door closer, so that those stay locked and closed, hallways, that kind of stuff. Any tenant can access those hallways and things. And then we use deadbolts that are on a master key system. So our maintenance guy has a master key that he can go in. Our in-house maintenance guy on W2, he can go in using a master key, all that kind of stuff. Property managers can go in, that kind of stuff. And then the way we set lockout policy is, if I have somebody available and it's feasible for me to get somebody over there and we facilitate it, we charge a $75 lockout, and that covers my time. Because if my person's available, like let's say my leasing person's available and it's like 6 o'clock, then, I mean, I'm paying them over their 40. That's time and a half. That costs me money. So we do sometimes facilitate those. If we're not available, like I don't have somebody, I can't get somebody out there, we don't have to, we have it in our policy that if we can facilitate it, we can. If we can't, then call a locksmith and standard, or wait till business hours when we have somebody potentially available, but you can call a locksmith. And locksmith can go over and they can just use their little key jiggling thing and open a door.
Right. Right.
It just costs them more than what we do. I get it.
And again, you try to be their solution, not add to their problem, but at some point they do have to take responsibility. You know, it's their home. It's how they live there. So they do have to take some responsibility for that.
Yeah, and
So.
even if it's one person, we make sure we give them at least two keys, because
Okay.
if it's another person, they can give a relative a key, they can give somebody they know, like a friend a key or something like that, or just have it somewhere. They have more than one key, so if that one gets lost, they have another. And that helps mitigate stuff as well. Sorry if I'm
So
talking
think,
too much about keys.
no, you're perfect. So think back over the years. What are some things that you started off doing that you said, okay, this is going to be part of our system, that as you got more clarity and you saw how it was working or not working out, you said, oh, we are so changing this. And you and I had a conversation the other night about something as simple as blinds in the windows. Any other things like that, and share with us about your thoughts on blinds, and is there anything else that's along that line that you used to do that you say, oh, we are not doing that anymore?
Blinds on my personal property specifically. On managed properties, we're not on that because it's or we're not doing this. But on my personal properties, I don't like doing blinds because what I've observed every single time, like clockwork, is tenants get their curtains that they really like, that they want, and they put them up anyway, regardless of whether I have blinds there or not. And my blinds are completely wrecked every single time. And those start to add up in cost over time. If you're doing that every single turn, like you have vacancy one every 1 or 2, 3 years, and you're changing out blinds every single time, that slowly is adding up. And so on my personal properties, I made the decision that I'm not going to be doing blinds. And I'm phasing those out. If they want to get curtains and stuff, they're already going to do that. They're going to get them. And that's kind of the decision I made on my own properties, but I'm not doing that across the portfolio for
Now,
management.
do you have it in your lease, though, that they can't put blankets or
Yes, we especially,
whatever?
yeah,
Because
no.
they move in, it's late at night, they didn't get to the store yet, so they tack a towel over the window or a red blanket over the window or whatever.
Yeah, we put like no newspaper, tinfoil, blankets, towel, that kind of stuff. Anything that's not like an actual like curtain is not I've got it like spelled out pretty well in the lease agreement, that they can't put that kind of stuff up, or that stuff that's not an actual blind or a curtain up.
Is there anything else you can think of over the years that you used to do that you say we are just not doing that anymore?
Trying to think. Things that we've kind of transitioned is trying to think. A lot of the I'll circle back if I think of that.
Now I know for us, again, you get more clarity the longer you do this. And so for us, like you said, anytime there's an issue, then we write a policy about it and it makes its way into the lease. And so one of the things being in this political season is, they can have a political sign in their yard. I mean that, they're allowed to do that. And of course those signs come down after, the political season is over. But what we don't allow is we don't allow them to put any kind of banners all over the actual house. And again, we didn't have to deal with that until one day we were driving by, because we like at least every week or so, we drive by all 28 doors just to, we're checking to see if there's any shingles off or if there's tree limbs that need attention or if there's trash out all over the yard or whatever. We're just kind of making sure everything is kept up current. And we drove by and there's these political flags and banners actually attached to the house all over the house. The whole house was covered with them. And we were like, uh-oh.
Something that we have done, I guess, related to that is we have it spelled out in the lease agreement, but it's also something that is in the Ohio Revised Code that has been very helpful for us in the past, is that flags and exterior signage on common area, which if it's a multifamily, if it's a duplex, the yard is common area. We have that outlined that it is common area. We don't allow stuff in the common areas. They can put stuff on their leased space. So if they want to have their sign in their window, perfect. We can't prohibit that. We're not allowed to prohibit political signs. We're not allowed to fully prohibit flags and stuff like that. They are allowed to put flags up. It ha Our lease has it spelled out, and so does the Ohio Revised Code, that if they have to go to us if they want to put a fl or if they want to put a flag up, and we have to both agree upon where it goes. We mostly just stipulate with flags that they have to be on on one of those poles, like one of those side slanted ones, and it has to be mounted somewhere where it's not like, don't drill it through my vinyl siding, but you can put it right here where it's not on the vinyl siding. It's not causing damage to the property. And as long as they do that, we allow that. We haven't actually had that come up too often, but that is something that we did outline, especially with the apartment complexes, because if you're putting like flat, like 3-4 flags up over here on this side, and then over here they've got 3 or 4 of the opposite ones, and they're at each other.
Well, in our case, they were putting actual vinyl banners, right, attaching it right to the front of the house, and yeah, which was not allowed, of course, in the Ohio Revised Code. So we immediately had to include that in our lease in the future to eliminate that. But yeah, we immediately had to address that because that was starting to be an issue. So
oh, another thing that we did add is in our lease, security systems. It gets more, they're starting to become more and more prevalent because they're getting cheaper and cheaper. But we allow the DIY systems where it's like the, I forget what the one is, Simply Safe, like those kinds of systems where you're taping the things up and they're like the 3M adhesives. Those are perfectly fine. We have to have a code and we have to be notified 10 days in advance with a code and everything before you have it in place, so that if we have an emergency and it sets off a alarm system, that's going to create a huge inconvenience for us. If we have to go in for like an emergency water leak or something pouring down and the, you know what I mean? But we only allow those like ones that are the adhesives. We don't let people, because we have had this before where somebody has gone through, drilled the holes, ran the wires, all that stuff with one of those ADT type places.
Ah.
And dealing with one of those systems being added to your apartment without your knowledge. I mean, if you want to remove it, then you have to go through, fill in all the holes and do all that. Just having that outlined up front and being like, hey, we allow the adhesive ones, that helps mitigate you having that kind of stuff come up in the future.
All right. I just made a note. There's something I need to add to my lease.
I can send you the verbiage I've got.
Yeah. I just learned something new. Yeah. Cause we just now have one like that. They added the whole Ring camera thing and they've got cameras everywhere. And it was a boyfriend girlfriend situation. And so now she's like, when we go to talk to her, she takes us clear out on the edge of the property because she's like, he's got cameras and recording devices everywhere. Well, now she's moving. And I told Mark, I said, we're going to have to go through this property with a fine tooth comb. I said, we don't dare leave any of that in here, or a new tenant will think we're spying on them as a tenant. And so I said, we're going to have to make sure all those cameras and recording devices are gone once she moves out. But again, we weren't asked. The boyfriend just came in and just wired the whole place like that.
Yeah. Another thing that I found helpful, because you will run into this, especially if you're investing in the Lancaster and Newark markets, or anywhere around central Ohio, you're going to run into properties that utilities are not split, and you're including, you can either do like a flat billing, you can include utilities in the rent, you can do all, or you can bill back on square footage or occupancy, that kind of stuff. You've got all kinds of options you can do with included utilities. But something that's been very helpful in our lease agreement that we have is that I think it's if it exceeds over 20% over the 6-month average, we can bill back that difference evenly across the apartments.
Ah.
If the utilities are included, we have that in there. If it exceeds over the over 20% over the 6-month average, we can bill back that difference evenly across the apartments, or it's spelled out like something like square footage or occupancy or something. But that has given us the options in the past where if you have tenants wasting utilities, then you're not fully out the cost of them. You have the remedy to bill it back. And that kind of stuff. $10 error we do for utilities falling out of names. We do $50, or we do like a $50 a month charge to the tenant for not having utilities in their name. And we charge $10 per bill back to the tenant.
Ah, good to know. Now, what I did most recently, I have a fourplex in Lancaster, and I did separate out the water meter. The gas was separated out, but the water meter was not. And I just paid our maintenance guy, and the city of Lancaster was so easy to work with. And they let us split that out. And so now we do have a tenant that's behind in his bill. And so I asked, I said, okay, in the past, I said, the landlord was kind of responsible for that water. She said, no, not anymore. She said, yours is split on the individual meters. She said his amount that he's past due goes with him.
Yeah, so Lancaster is really landlord friendly when it comes to that kind of stuff with the utilities office, because what you'll see in like areas like Newark, New Lexington, Columbus, the utilities follow the property, and if they go unpaid, they will file a lien on the property. And so like I've talked to people up in Columbus where they will keep the utilities on their end, and they'll bill it back on the tenant ledger monthly so that they can keep tabs that the bill's not racking up in cost. So when the tenant moves out, you're not hit with a huge bill that you got to pay. Lancaster is really landlord friendly in the aspect that it follows the tenant. You can fill out the form if the tenant doesn't pay their or doesn't pay their utilities, and it's reverting back to you that that like if the te if it reverts back to you, basically what Lancaster will do is go here, fill out this form, pay $25. We serve them notice that 10 days to get utilities back into their name or it shuts off. And make sure you have the notification set up, because if the utilities are delinquent, and they're going to either revert, you can keep it on you and bill it back to them. That's what we found most helpful, is to do it that way. But if you do decide that you need to shut off utilities, then make sure you have those notifications set up so you actually get notified so they don't just start getting you bills again.
Yeah, good to know. Yeah,
But
I love it. Gosh, Sean, this has been so informative. I want to open it up for questions. And in the meantime, can you type in the chat how folks can get in touch with you if they want to? And I will also put in the chat how folks can get in touch with me. Mine is just kathybenner.com. Mine's short and sweet and easy to remember. I'll let Sean put his in there. Any questions from anyone in the group? It looks like we have Sue and Sherry and Kyle and Adrian. We've got Ernie and Gia and Vince. So thank you so much for being with us. And let me see who has their hand up. Kyle, yes. Go ahead and unmute.
Are you currently taking on new properties, new clients?
Yes, we are. We're actually looking to expand quite significantly over the next 3 years, primarily in the Lancaster and surrounding markets, so Bremen, Baltimore, all those little small areas around Lancaster. The Licking County area, which includes Heath, Hebron, Newark, Pataskala, all those types of areas. And then we'll also look at Hocking and Perry counties. We're going to try to expand out to Canal, Pickerington, and Circleville over the next 3 years as well, but we don't have a decent footing there yet.
Okay, thanks. I might have some people to send your way.
Yeah, I'm happy to talk to people, even if it's something where it may not work out. I'm still happy to have conversations and give people advice, help people out. I'm always happy to network.
All right, I am copying and pasting your information because Adrian said he didn't see it. So I copied it and pasted it back out there for you, Adrian. It went to the panelists, Sean, and I
Oh,
recopied
sorry.
it out to everyone. Nope, it's good. Good, good, good. All right, Adrian, do you see it now? Focus Realty there. Yes. Perfect. Any other questions? And I want to introduce Kyle. Kyle is my co-host, my co-mod, and he's been in the audience all this time because we had already gotten started by the time he jumped on. But I just wanted to say welcome, Kyle. Thank you for being with us today as well. And I don't know if you want to share your camera and tell the folks how to connect with you. Kyle is kind of our in-house for the Happy House Hunters. He's kind of our in-house realtor. He gets us into all the properties we want to see. He does our boots on the ground for us. So if any of you have a property that you want us to walk it with you know, just to see if we can put together what your rehab cost might be before you purchase something, we're welcome to do that. We're welcome to work with you in between tenants. Just that anything that you need help with, we're here to help you. We know this is a prime area, Central Ohio, to do buy and holds. The area is going to explode in the next few years. We know it's coming, and there's all kind of housing developments that are getting ready to go in. And what happens is the more people that come, then the more businesses that come, and the more businesses that come, the more people that come, and then the more workers that come, and everyone needs housing. And so we are just sitting on a gold mine in Central Ohio. So, Kyle, do you want to speak to that for just a moment?
Yeah, thanks, Kathy. Sorry, I'm on my phone today because I'm out and about running around, so I couldn't get the app to work. So I just joined in over the web or whatnot.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, that's what we do. We go and look at properties. You know, this is all fun and theoretical and on Zoom and stuff, but actually the real fun happens when you get into a house and look at it in person and get multiple sets of eyes on it and start crunching the numbers. So yeah, we're always happy to help you do that.
Yes, Kyle, thank you. And he's gotten us into several properties, and we try to do a boots on the ground at least once or twice a month. Whenever something comes up, if I just would stay home long enough, right, Kyle? I'm home now for a minute, so good to know. Any other questions for Sean?
Oh, I also put our page for our services. It has a little bit more about what services we offer and our pricing and everything too.
Good.
And our contact information, just kind of all the information about our services I've got on there. I sent in the chat as well. I made sure to put everybody in it this time.
Good. And Kyle put his contact information out there as well, if anybody is wanting to get into a property to look. Ernie says, nice, Sean. You're pretty smart. Says, we like your outlook on being a landlord manager. Yes. Ernie, do you guys have property already?
Yes, as a matter of fact, we do.
Good.
We own an apartment in Michigan.
Okay. Very good.
We've been landlords since about 2010. And it's been real good for us. One of the things that was probably the most helpful to us to save a lot of money is we made mistakes in the beginning like anybody else. But once we started the screening process and doing background checks on people, that's when landlording became much, much, much more easier for us, you know, and more profitable too, by putting better people in that ain't going to ruin the place. But I like what you, Miss Kathy and Sean had to say. You guys are right on track. I give you a lot of credit. I think your presentation was very sensible. It made sense and it was practical, because we're sitting here smiling, listening to what Sean is saying. We've also had very similar experiences. So I give you credit, Sean, you're doing great.
Yeah, thank you. And did you have any questions on things that I may be able to help you with as far as your processes, or even just some questions that you've had as you're kind of going on your journey?
Our little apartment is more small. We haven't had any turnover in maybe 8 or 9 years. It took a long time for us to fine tune the process of selecting quality people, but so our building actually runs itself in some ways. So I guess we don't really have too many questions at this time. But I will say that I'll admire what you're doing. You guys have a much larger operation than we do. So, you know, I guess really quality people are easier to come by when you've just got a small place and a few rentals to put in. But when you're dealing with volumes, you know, not everybody can be a quality person. So you're very well prepared to take care and manage what you're taking care of for your clients. I'm proud of you and very impressed, because I know it's not easy. A property manager has to play the role of the local punching bag. So I'm sure you've had abuse, but you seem to handle it very professionally, that you refer back to the rules, but you don't take it personally. And that's really a great coping, because every time you've been talking, you've been mentioning the lease agreement. That's what holds up in court. Evictions, and you're handling it from more of a logical perspective instead of a personal perspective, and that's what really makes or breaks a landlord, not to take things personally. So you've got a lot of good coping skills hidden under how you're proceeding with your processes. That's what we notice more on a deeper level here. That's why we're proud of you. You're professional.
And
successful too. So we see all of this, because we have experience too. So
thank you very much. And then applicants, we are like with applicants, the biggest thing that we found is with a private landlord, you can kind of do a little bit as a private landlord, you can do a little bit more things. But when you're a big company like us, where we're a lot more open to the public, we're a lot more open to government agencies, those kinds of things. It takes a lot of skill and like time to be able to build out an objective standpoint for screening is what we found. And we have to stay objective as we can. And not differ from our policies. Otherwise, that could potentially open us up to fair housing issues. Even if there isn't even a fair housing issue there, it's the perception where we're open to a complaint. And if we get a complaint, that can cost us well over $1,000 in legal fees. So,
you have to remember business is business, and that you may like a tenant, but they're not really your friends because they also can turn on you too. So as a landlord, you're always on guard against being vulnerable. You got to remember good boundaries, not to take things personal, but don't let them play the sympathy card. Like you had mentioned, letting them stay long and long and long with empty promises to get caught up. But what we've noticed is usually when a tenant falls behind, they never do get caught up, and you're better off cutting them short, to be honest. Because then the dynamic shifts. And what we've also noticed is when tenants want to get nasty or create difficulties in your professional relationship, usually it means they're out the door anyway. They don't care regardless. So we've noticed that. That's why it's not a friendship. Tenants will say anything and be as nice as can be. And they might be a horrible monster lurking on the inside to wanting to destroy your place and terrorize you so they can get away for free. But that's why we look at the facts. Either the person's a criminal or they're not. So we just look at things more factual, like that, background checks. And it's saved us a lot of grief. We actually have good relationships with our tenants. They've been in our building for 9 years and had zero turnover. And you know what we've learned is we tell the tenants just three things: that our role as a landlord, first of all, it's a professional business. We don't take any interest in the personal lives of the tenants, nor do we interfere. It's none of our business what they do. The only three things we take interest in is your safety while you're living in our property, the care of the building, and might I put an emphasis on enforcing that the rent gets paid and that the rules of the lease agreement are upheld. Other than that, we don't take personal interest in the lives of the tenants. Professional building, and that means setting good boundaries and not being overly friendly. And in some ways that works out good because tenants, they appreciate their space as well, that they don't feel like they're being policed. But I will say, I like what you had to say about Google telephone service. We learned and thought, wow, I never thought of that. That's a great idea to have a separate line, a number that rings to the same phone for your tenants and business, and then your private people, is separate from that. I never thought of that, but I learned something from you, Sean. I appreciate that about the Google phone. I just wanted to add that in there. Go ahead.
Yeah. And if you're looking for phone recommendations, the two I'd look at is Google Voice is a good one for kind of getting your feet off the ground. And then one that we're using currently called TalkRoute. They have like a lower level package that's good for kind of just a basis to get started. And then if you want to expand it later, you can start like a phone tree and have multiple phone numbers in it and everything like that. That's another good one to look at. It's more of a flat pricing model than a per user model, like some of the more expensive places are.
Yeah. Another thing that I could say that would sound controversial, to be honest, we live in Michigan. In Michigan, there's nice places and there's less than nice places where there's a lot of drugs around. The drugs seem to appear more in some of the poorer areas in Michigan than in some of the middle class areas. And honestly, I've always had this funny thought, Miss Kathy. What do you and Sean think? If you want to have an ease, and now you're going to laugh, but if you want to have an easier time renting to people, because I have talked to other landlords that have horrible experiences in renting. I've always thought, well, if you want to have an easier time in renting, don't buy your property in a slum joint. Buy it in a nice place where the better people are found to start with. So landlording can be a blessing and give you a good, easy life, or it could also be a nightmare where you walk on eggshells. But a lot of the landlords that I've heard that seem to have the most difficulty in disputes with their tenants, even if the landlord is behaving very rational, logical, and appropriate, seem The horror stories that I've heard mostly, not all, but mostly seem to come from the poor neighborhoods where there's a lot of drug throughout. So it might be important if you want to buy, in just my opinion, to buy properties and hold them for a long, long time to be a stable landlord, buy them in the better neighborhoods. That way you can attract the better people that are slightly more educated, more on the ball, that work and job and have something to do that interests them, that they're not focused just purely ruining your life or destroying your place. I just want to say that. I've always wanted to say that.
No, I totally agree with you, Ernie. I get that totally. But for some of our investors, oftentimes we or they are price driven to get into the business. But again, you can buy into some of those neighborhoods with those headaches. I totally agree.
And that would be kind of more closer to like the class of rentals. So we're a property management company that specializes in anywhere from B to C minus class of rentals. And then there's companies that are specific to like A and B class rentals. That's where you'll see more of those like dedicated companies up in like Columbus area, where they'll strictly just do A and B class rentals, and they're very picky on what properties they'll take on, because that's the class that they gear towards. And then you'll see other companies where they specialize in the C class rentals and the B class rentals. That's kind of where we're a mix of like anything. We don't have anything A. A is like new build stuff, like what you would see like brand new apartment complexes. Those are A. B is like where you're looking at some of these apartment complexes that have been around for a few years. C is kind of like a lot of the primary market of Lancaster. And then D is like the dilapidated stuff where like you can look up and see daylight. but yeah, that's the classes of rentals you got to keep in mind. The way that you manage them are entirely different. So like A and B class rentals, the way you would handle a situation would potentially d completely differ from C class rental. Because like you with A and B class rental, there's like a higher, I guess, how do I describe it? They have different, they're the type of rental it is different than the way that they're managed. The different problems you run into are different. So you're having a lot less delinquency on the A and B class rentals, but you're also, your costs are higher. You're also getting higher rents. You're just working with a different market, per se.
Well, to be fair and not to be overly biased, I know that, as a landlord, to just be more honest and real as a person, it can actually make you go insane, the amount of abuse a landlord would have to take if you're dealing with mentally disordered clients that are more difficult, that direct abuse on the person. But what I can say, even the areas that are more poor or drug infested, they do have a lot of potential to make money. If it was me, I would focus on doing fix and flips in areas that I didn't seek a professional relationship with. Areas that might be more difficult to be a long-term landlord in, there's still potential to make money. And a lot of people, they might fit right in that area. But if it was me personally, with the limitations that I have in terms of tolerance and dealing with people who are somewhat illogical, I think I could recognize areas that are more poor or drug infested to be better opportunities to fix and flip, where you rehab a building. You make your money, you sell it, and then there's no relationship after. I think that would probably work better for me, because I'm not that strong as a person emotionally to take abuse. So
Well, and
everything
that,
has
and Ernie, that
opportunity.
comes back to my point early on, is that is you're a nice person, and that's what happens with a lot of landlords, is they're really nice people, and they don't know how to say no sometimes to these tenants.
Yeah, well, what I always thought, to be honest, and I like the, actually, I was chuckling when I heard you say that. You're so right. See, what I always thought was like, see, I made the mistake of being a landlord and believing that people were like me, that if I was good to other people, then people would appreciate it and be good in return. That if I, oh, I don't know, Sean had said, gone in and put a new all new carpeting, painted the place, put all new fixtures in, made sure the appliance worked, or replaced them with an inexpensive substitute, made the place beautiful, was polite, kind, flexible, willing to meet them more on their terms. I always honestly thought that that then they would be reasonable. They would appreciate the place because it's theirs. If I kept the rent slightly lower in the price than what I could have got out of it. Maybe they would think, appreciate me that I was doing them a favor and want to remain there for a long time, that they're getting a, well, the way I look at it is like this. They're getting a beautiful place that's taken care of. It's in a nice neighborhood with a good school district, in a beautiful neighborhood that's all kept up, clean, nice, everything new. All you have to do is just stay there, mind your own business, enjoy living there and pay your rent. And you've got a very polite and nice, flexible, workable landlord that'll be right out there to fix anything that needs to be taken care of. If something breaks, just let us know. We'll be right over to take care of it. And I'll tell you the truth, the ones that seem to miss the big picture in life are the ones that I didn't do background checks on. They had a history of having 50 different residences in the last 3 years. And that did hurt my feelings. I had to go to court and do the eviction process. And I tell you, even when I was in the right with the lease agreement pictures, you know, all the documents to show that I was in the right, I still trembled because it was a very frightening experience to stand in front of the judge and God himself and let the judge decide you and the tenant's fate. There's many times I shivered and was scared and went through with it anyway, you know, but that's what I began to realize is that it does make the world a beautiful and colorful place. It makes the world very interesting, but not everybody thinks the same way. And no, people do not have the same values. Like my aunt Merle was a landlady. I actually followed in her footsteps. She was a landlady since the 1950s. And what she said to me, Aunt Merle, she says, "Well, Ernie, it worked good for us and Uncle Chuck. It'll still work good for you. It'll give you a good life." But what I found honestly is people think crazy. They don't appreciate what you do. Aunt Merle, I remember Aunt, now you got to take Aunt Merle with a grain of salt. She was in her 90s when she passed away, probably 10 years ago. She said, they look at it like you're getting rich off of them, and so they don't appreciate you, and they won't be able to see the patience you have with the people. So you do have to be fair to yourself and just keep it professional and not get attached yep. to them.
Hey, Ernie, I agree totally. It sounds like your aunt had the right message there, because that is definitely what happens. You do have to keep it professional. Sean does a very great job of keeping it professional. Sean, thank you so much for being on our podcast today. Yeah. I want to say thanks to Sherry and Adrian and Ernie and Gia and Kyle. And I see a couple of folks had to jump off already. Because they have to get back to work. They're on their lunch break. But anyway, thank you so much for being with us today. Please join us. We're here every Monday at 12 noon with a different topic. Today's topic happens to be real estate. And so the third Monday of every month, it is all about real estate. So please mark your calendars. It's the same Zoom ID that you got into the call today. It's the exact same one every time. And we don't change that up on you. So feel free to mark your calendars every third Monday for the real estate topic. And we'll see everyone again next time. And Sean, thank you so much for being on today. We really appreciate you.
Yeah, no problem. And if anybody has any questions, definitely feel free to reach out to me. I'm always happy to answer questions and network. So
yes, I will be posting the replay in kathybenner.com. If you just Google Kathy Benner, I'm the whole first page of Google, and you'll see the podcast link there. So you can go to the podcast and listen to the replay. I'll probably have it posted maybe even later today, but definitely by tomorrow morning, I'll have the replay posted. And in the description of the replay, I will put all of Sean's information there so that you can connect with him in case you didn't get that copied down. So thank you, everyone, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you.
Bye, everybody.